Absolute Rally, powered by the Kielder Works team. Cordless tools tailored for the world of motorsport.
Hello everyone, welcome to Absolute Rally, episode 2, season 18. Welcome back. Have you recovered from Rally GB? Have your boots dried out yet? Have you dried out yet? I'm going to ask my colleagues. Right, are you dry now? You didn't even get wet, did you? Let's be honest.
No, you're right. I didn't get wet. I was definitely inside by the time the rain had come out. So now I stayed dry, but exciting weekend, wasn't it?
It was mega, and we're going to talk about that in a second. Jack Bengen, we know you weren't going to get wet, as it were, but did you enjoy what you've seen?
I'd normally say I'm too Hollywood to get wet or make some sort of joke like that, but Hollywood's a nickname that I can't really use on this event because it's been overshadowed by the man himself, so I won't go too much into that. But yeah, I really enjoyed what I saw, and there's a few new interesting aspects of the event which I was looking forward to seeing, and yeah, good to see the event get a little bit of a shake-up and an interesting rally, even if the leaderboard reads quite predictable in terms of if you're going to write down all the fastest drivers in the WRC, but the event itself I think was a bit more interesting.
You mentioned leaderboards. Should we do what we predicted? Should we do our predictions very quickly? Should we have a revisit? Right, Jack,
yeah, why not?
Oi Tanak to win.
Mm-hmm.
Elvin Evans second.
Yeah.
Yari Matti third.
Well, the second and third didn't go so well for me, really.
No. So you were good there. Ryan Champion, you were Oi Tanak to win. Chris Meek second, Sebastian Ogier third.
That's a better effort.
That's not a bad effort, is it?
Could have been for a while.
I had Sebastian Ogier to win, Oi Tanak second, and Elvin Evans third. And Trevor Agnew had Elvin Evans to win, Oi Tanak second, Sebastian Ogier third. So I'm trying to wait. Probably right. You're probably the closest.
Well, I was about to claim it anyway, even if you didn't give it to me.
While we're talking about the top three, can I kick things off?
Go on.
I think that might be the most impressive rally that we've seen since Hyundai came back into the WRC.
Ooh, go on. You've got to qualify a big statement like that.
Well, I'm going to invite Absolute Rally listeners to write in. But given how far Oi Tanak was ahead last year and how dominant he was and how far Hyundai have been adrift on this rally, and don't forget how far adrift Thierry Neuville has been on this rally at times when he got demoted to the second team and then rolled it into the logs on the Friday, and for him to be 10.9 seconds off Oi at the end of the event, for me that was pretty spectacular. And on an event again, as we've seen since Adamo's come in, like Finland, another event where Hyundai have been poor in the past and made massive, massive improvements. And for me, that was just a stunning performance from Thierry Neuville and Nicolas Schulze.
To back up what you've just said, we've got a Gary Boyd fact. We haven't had one for a few episodes. Gary does send them in all the time. But right, this is going to kind of just reconfirm what you've just been saying, Jack Bengen. After Rally Turkey, the average winning margin in 2019 season was 28.1 seconds. The lowest ever average winning margin over an entire season is currently 28 seconds, and that was from 2010. With Oit's 10.9 second win over Seb in Wales, this season's average now is just down to 26.7 seconds. With still two rounds to go, that record from 2010 looks like it's majorly under threat. There you go. That's a proper stat. That's a proper Gary Boyd stat for you, Jack Bengen. And one that you can trot out now when you're in the pub later.
Well, you're almost expecting Gary to upstage himself because his facts and stats are so good that you just expect it to be brilliant now, don't you? And it's kind of reached a base level.
There's a level now that we need. We obviously there's a pressure that comes.
It's a bit like this podcast, really.
Oh, I see what you did there. It's not everyone's cup of tea, though, Jack Bengen. We know that.
Well, they're wrong.
We do know that. Let's be honest. It's not everyone's cup of tea. Or cup of coffee, indeed.
I think some people just don't admit to listening, but there we are.
Yeah, okay. Moving on.
Closet listeners.
Come out the closet. Be fine. Right, where were we? We were talking about Rally GB. I'm gonna ask you the question, Ryan Champion. I want to talk about lots of things with regards to GB. I want to talk about the service park. I want to talk about the Solberg effect and everything else. But what Jack's just been saying there, there was clearly another level of those top three drivers. But again, you know, we didn't say it flippantly. We did give we did give Elvin a bit of a big up last week. We thought he'd be in the mix, and you know, you look at the time that he lost on very early on in the rally, and I know if buts, whens and whys and everything else, but that 40 odd seconds, that would have made such a difference. And all of a sudden we potentially could have had a very, very different top three.
Absolutely. I mean, at that stage time with the puncture, what did he lose? 43 seconds, I think. And he was 48 seconds behind at the end. So, and obviously, if he'd been in the heat of the battle for the win, then, you know, maybe he would have pulled a bit more out. But you're absolutely right. I think it was a brilliant drive by Elvin, really, to be out for that long. And I know he'd had some mileage, but to be out of the front-running cutthroat battle that WRC gives you, and to come back with a performance like that was brilliant. And I think it's great for him. It's great for M Sport to show the car still very competitive. And like you said, it's just such a shame that that happened, because it could have been a different battle at the front.
Jack, are we seeing, you know, every point of a season, it feels like, since Elvin's been in a World Rally car, and not too dissimilar, I suppose, to Chris Meek, are we seeing, you know, this kind of digging in now to try and, you know, salvage something for the following season? Is this where this extra 10th comes from as well for Elvin?
It's a difficult one, isn't it? I think over the last couple of seasons we've seen that he's got the pace. We've seen it in various different rallies, and we saw him get beat very narrowly by Terry Nerville a couple of times in recent years, and come very close to winning that second WRC event, and obviously that big win at Rally GB. But for me, it's just, you know, I'm not particularly surprised by what I've seen this weekend, because, like I said, I feel like he's proven that he's got the pace over a weekend. What needs to come from Elvin now is the consistency, which is what won Sebastian Ogier's two titles in that very same car. You know, we know that car's got the pace on that event. It's been very successful there before. We know it's got the pace on other events, but the difference between Elvin Evans and Sebastian Ogier is that Sebastian continuously put that car on the podium when it probably maybe shouldn't have been there, but he's done it anyway. And you know, that's the difference between the two. That's the difference between a six-time world champion and someone who's won one WRC event. So Elvin's coming back from injury, and I thought he was absolutely fantastic on that event. I thought he did everything that was asked of him, pretty much. I think he would have at least been close to Oit, and I think I felt like Oit maybe had a little bit more in the tank over Saturday and Sunday, and he could have pulled a little bit more time if he needed it, but we'll never know if that was the case. But Elvin would have been right there in that battle for victory and mixing things up, and we need those people to do that, because people settle for positions and take points, and when you've got someone else breathing down your neck, it's more difficult to do that. So we need the more people we've got challenging that top three, the better it is for the WRC as well.
Right, that fine line that everybody treads, of course, in rallying, and this level, that line seems to be even narrower. And when you're fighting for your future, as you know, Elvin, and we've just mentioned about Chris, and we'll talk more about Chris in a second, I guess, that line's even thinner. You know, I must admit, when I seen he had that problem early on, I was thinking, oh God, we've been accused, you and I, of course. I think we've all been accused, of course, being very biased, haven't we, towards Elvin, from the other side of the world, once or twice by one of our listeners. I hope you're still with us, by the way, friend over the other side of the world. But, you know, granted, home event, but at that level, I'm not entirely sure that makes much of a difference these days, right? Or am I just rosy-coloured spectacles here?
No, I think you're right to a degree. I mean, they all know the stages very well. Some probably even know the stages better now. So he's obviously got a lot of home support. He's on home ground, and there is the odd stage that he knows incredibly well. But I would say over the course of the rally, that balances out. And like we said, they all know the stages well. They all recce them. But now to the same degree, they all watch the in-car over and over again. So he still has to drive the stages, and I think it was a great drive. And like you said, the line is, I guess the line has always been, everybody's always driven close to the limit, if you like. But now everybody's just absolutely on the limit all the time. And like you said, the margins, I mean, to win the rally, Oit Tanak won the rally by what? It was less than 11 seconds after something like 3 hours of driving. So it's incredibly tight. And it was very, very close, really, between the top four. And then we saw Chris drop away slightly. We saw Ogier drop away slightly, but as Jack's already said, I think Thierry Neuville, a fantastic drive to be within, you know, just over 10 seconds of Tanak on that rally. And, you know, with really tough conditions as well, very, very slippery stages, a lot of rain, a little bit of fog in there. So, you know, it was really a proper tough Wales Rally GB.
Can I just put this I'll come to you first, Jack. It's going to be the same point to you as well, right? So listening on this one, you know, we've seen the interview with Adamo after the rally, and I did feel sorry. I think it was Kiri that was given the task to go and see him. I think it was Kiri. If I'm incorrect, and it was the wrong interviewer, I apologize. But, Jack, obviously Elvin was let off the leash. We knew that before the rally. Do you feel perhaps the drivers around him, the likes of Andreas and maybe even Chris to some degree, perhaps looked at the bigger picture on the last day and went, do you know what, we probably need to behave ourselves here now?
Yeah, I think we're at that stage of the season, aren't we? We're at the stage of the season where arguably it's even more intense than previous years, because we know there's a few decent drivers who could be without a seat next year. I know it rotates every year, and every year there's a bit of a shake-up and things are a bit different, but I think there's 4 or 5, maybe even 6 drivers who are still fighting for their seats next year and could well be moved around. So it's an interesting time of year, and I think the addition of Adamo, who's obviously so demanding on his drivers, and you know they've come to respect that and enjoy driving under him, but he does bring that level of expectation, and there's no messing around with him. If he's upset or if he's disappointed in the performance of his drivers, then he'll say it, and we've seen that constantly over the course of the season. So I can completely understand if there's been some position holding there. For Ogier, I don't think it really affects him. But obviously Oit was leading the rally, so he just needed to stay there. So yeah, but further down the order, I think there's definitely people holding
position. Sorry to interrupt, but you say that, but watching the power stage and seeing Oit doing what Oit did, and watching Tommy Mäkinen's results in kind of facial features throughout it, you know, knowing full well he really didn't need to probably have that push, but he decided he was going to have that push anyway. And
that's Oit though. He's done it on every single rally this year. Whenever he feels the car is underneath him, then he'll go for the power stage win every time. He knows how important those 5 points can be, and you know, we've seen it time after time. And he came the event that I did, Germany, he came to the end of the last stage and he was furious after winning the rally, and it was because of the brake problem that stopped him going for the power stage points. You know, he wants every single point, and he wants to win every single stage if he feels like the car's good enough. And you know, we've seen that over the course of the year. It's very rarely that he's let the pedal off and really gone completely cautiously. You know, I think he's putting a lot of effort all year.
Right. Do you think, just at the same point to you, really, do you feel that on the last day, the drivers around Elvin, you know, Andreas, Chris, perhaps, you know, Chris is often being accused of not looking perhaps at the bigger picture. I'm still unsure of Andreas' position with Adamo, and certainly Adamo wasn't overly enthusiastic with Craig Breen's performance, which we're going to talk about in a second. But do you feel, you know, there was a level of holding station?
I think from Mickelson's position, it only really came on the power stage. Obviously, he cruised through. But I mean, at the beginning of the last day, he was still fighting tooth and nail with Elvin. So I think, you know, I think for most of the final day, Mickelson was still pushing hard, because obviously it was important for Hyundai and the manufacturer's points. I think from Chris's point of view, that was a big fight going on at the front, wasn't it? It was a big fight by the three fastest drivers in the World Championship. And if Sebastian Ogier is saying, I'm going flat out, I can't do any more, and he can't keep up, then, you know, it shows just where the levels are. And yes, we know about the car, and we could talk about the car a bit more, but nonetheless, Ogier was absolutely flat out and getting dropped. And I just wonder with Chris, I don't even know if it was necessarily a conscious thing, but Chris was right at the sharp end until the pace just went up a notch. And, you know, subconsciously, Chris has got to be thinking about his future. He needed a solid result, which he got, and he did a great job. He brought home great points. If he'd extracted another 10%, would he have been, you know, fighting for second place? Could he have taken points off the others, maybe, but he could have also been off the road. So, you know, it was a good drive by Chris, and he was very near the pace. And I just think maybe subconsciously that that pegged him back slightly.
I think the context of Yari Mati going off is a big thing there as well, because they really needed Chris's points at that point, you know, battling with Hyundai so close in the championship. Obviously, all we care about really is the drivers' championship, or that's always our main focus, and that's always the main focus of the fans. But the teams are there to win a championship at the end of the day, and Chris knows that, and he knows that if he'd gone off after Yari Mati, with the context of next year over his head, then that would have been very, very bad for his future. So,
well, Jack, you've led me where I wanted to go next. Ironically, well done. It's like we've done this before, isn't it? There's something in MN this week, of course, something which you're involved with. But David Evans has wrote this week with regards to Tommy Mäkinen's thoughts on his driver's performances and perhaps Chris's latter half of this season propelled him above Yari Mati with regards to, you know, next year. You know, I'm still a little bit surprised by that, because I still think it's very 50-50 myself.
It's like you've read the story.
Yeah, I know.
Brilliant stuff. Yeah, I think Tommy's very happy with what he's seen from Chris in the second half of the year. You know, I think there's some very difficult rallies in the first half of the WRC season, and Chris was coming off the fact that he'd been, you know, very surprisingly for him, dropped by Citroën and then missed, you know, the latter half of the season. Got into testing, but it's not really the same as doing an event. So coming into the season a little bit cold against, you know, two very, very strong teammates, arguably. You know, Yari Mati is the most experienced driver in the WRC, full stop. Or he was comfortably the fastest driver last year, without a shadow of a doubt, and should have won the championship under any other circumstances. So, you know, Chris is coming into a very daunting team there, and I'm not surprised that the first half of the season was, you know, maybe at times a little bit difficult. And to be honest, I don't think he did a bad job. I think he was very consistent through the first half of the season, and, you know, only really a couple of mistakes. And, you know, I don't like to talk about luck, but he did have a lot of punctures and a lot of issues. So I think he's strengthened things up in the second half of the season. And I think in general, he's driving a lot more sensibly. You know, he seems to have struck up a good relationship with Seb Marsh as well. That's another factor to take into consideration, a new co-driver for this year as well. And a lot of change for Chris, new car, new co-driver, coming back in after a big layoff. So, you know, he needed to be sensible about this year. And, you know, maybe we haven't seen the rally winning pace from him that we've seen in the past. And we won't know, you know, we won't really know whether that's still there until he's got next year sorted, I don't think. But yeah, a good first season with Toyota, and I'm not really sure he could have done a better job to lay the groundwork for getting another season next year without taking massive risks.
We're going to talk about him. We mentioned very, very briefly then, right? Craig Green said it was an over, I think it was an over optimistic note. Obviously, one of those frustrating offs. I was slightly confused, and I must admit, I'd like to ask Craig. He got straight out the car rather than firing it up. I don't know whether you noticed that as well. I thought he might have just fired it up and tried to get it out, but obviously dropped a little bit of time. Over optimistic note. And Adamo not pulling any punches either with his kind of review of Craig's performance at the weekend.
Well, firstly, with regards to getting out the car, I think it's amazing it had four wheels on it, let alone a rear spoiler. And I think it's obviously built like ProDrive used to build the Group A Subaru for one Colin McRae, because for the car to come back from that was quite impressive. And obviously all four wheels were pointing in the right direction. So it was great that he could not only continue, but, you know, they could put the car right and he could get to the finish. We underestimate how hard the World Rally Championship is. We see it week in, week out. We see the likes of Sebastian Loeb win, you know, World Championships on the back. We see Sebastian Ogier then do it. We're seeing these fantastic performances from Tanak currently without making mistakes. But we've just talked about where the limit is. It's so easy for just one thing to go wrong. You know, one pace note on the whole route can cause an accident like that. And like I said, it's a reflection of where the level of the championship is at the minute, that everything is so professional, the cars, the drivers, the teams. And when we see a mistake, we're almost surprised by it. But everything is, like I said, at such a level. You know, Craig's still not familiar with that car. Yes, he's done lots of rallies this year, and he's done lots of rallies with Paul in R5 cars. But again, you know, he's fighting at the front of the WRC, the top level of the sport and a top level car. So, you know, unfortunately, sometimes mistakes are going to happen when you're in that position. If you've been in the car for two seasons and been with the same core driver as we just talked about, then you know, you'd hope that wouldn't happen, but it does happen. Mistakes do happen now and again. There's no getting away from it. And you know, his pace had been solid before then. He'd been going well. At least he got to the end of the rally. It's a shame for him. It is a shame, but you know, I don't think you could be too hard on him. Even at Adamo, I don't think you could be too hard on him, really.
Mm. You know, and but is this the thing of, you know, Jack? Is this an appreciation maybe when you've got someone like a Tommy Mäkinen or indeed, you know, Malcolm Wilson, perhaps understanding what the drivers are going through maybe a little bit more than you know, maybe Adamo or maybe Pierre Boudard?
It's a difficult one, isn't it? I think Craig, obviously, not a lot of events this year, and that's the difficult thing for me. I think for him, he's a little bit out of practice, or you know, we've seen him doing some events in Ireland, Italy, and obviously Ypres is a very specialist event, although the competition's very, very high there. So you know, we've seen him out in rally cars, but this WRC level, like Ryan has spent a lot of time there describing, and very rightly so, is at such a level that I think we underestimate it quite heavily. And to be out for so many events, Craig, is what's is part of the problem for me. I think he's coming in a little bit unprepared, so it's a difficult one, really. I'm not sure if the team principal plays too much into it, and I don't think Adamo will be reading too much into that small mistake. I think he'll be looking at it and thinking, you know, Craig was on Andreas's pace at the point of the crash, and arguably had a bit more in the tank. So, I think the as hard as Adamo comes across, and as tongue in cheek as he can be, and you know, as funny as we all find him, I think he, at the end of the day, he's able to analyse drivers. He's very experienced, not just in rallying, in circuit racing as well. And he's been in charge of Hyundai's customer program for a long time. So, you know, he knows how to analyse a driver, whatever sort of tongue in cheek remarks he makes.
Okay. Well, we'll move on from that. Jack Bengen, I don't know whether you're going to stick around because we've got Hayden Paddon coming up. Are you going to stick around for this one, Jack Bengen, or have you got things to be writing?
Well, I've got things to be writing, I'm afraid.
Have you? Well, before we let you go, Jack Bengen, we need your any other business for this week. So if you'd like to do your any other business, Brian Champion and I will do ours a little bit later on. So the floor is yours.
Very, very easy and very simple, straightforward, any other business. I was very happy to see Alton Park return. It was basically a stage I've done many times on the Alton Park Neil Hackett stage rally. So, you know,
I thought you were going to say the PlayStation, to be honest.
Trailblazed for all the WRC drivers. So you're all welcome for mine and Paul O'Neill's wrecking over the years. So yeah, it was good to see that back. And there's some really nice historic pictures of people like Tony Pond going past Lodge and Old Hall Corner and stuff like that. So it was nice to see that kind of recreated. And I thought it seemed to run really well. It was great to see the pictures of that, although it was pretty dark. And also the biggest, well, arguably the biggest talking point for the weekend that wasn't really talked about for me, ironically, was Tom Cave's performance. I thought he was absolutely phenomenal in the Hyundai's, doing very few events in an R5 last year, but come back strong this year in the British Rally Championship. Now really missed out to Tom Edwards on the championship, but came
Tom,
to
Tom Edwards. Who's he? Matt's brother.
Tom Cave. Sorry, he's been battling with Matt Edwards in the BRT, is what I meant to say. He's got a new co-driver for Rally GB and finished third, 14 seconds behind Petter Solberg, and another 45 behind Cali Rovanperä. So I thought that was a pretty stunning performance, having a new co-driver, and bearing in mind he's only been doing British Rally Championship events this year.
Good on you, mate. Good on you. Well, you go away and write some words, we'll be back next week with you, Jack Bengen. Folks, we're going to go to a break, and we're going to go back with Hayden Paddon.
This is Absolute Rally.
Absolute Rally continues to be partnered by the Kielder Works team, who remain fully committed to the sport and are pioneers of the latest technology. Kielder cordless tools are tailored for all forms of competitive action.
Go back to the future with the Kielder Works team.
Welcome back to Absolute Rally. Thanks to Jack. Jack's gone away to write some words. He's a busy boy with autosport at the moment, so we'll leave him there. But we're back with Hayden Paddon. Welcome back to Absolute Rally, Hayden.
Yeah, thanks very much.
You're still in the UK after we predicted potentially that it was going to be a slightly better weathered Rally GB, but how wrong could we have been? It was a proper Rally GB, wasn't it?
Well, there was all this talk about a hurricane event coming in before the rally, but I'd probably say it's probably one of the best weathers and road conditions I've seen on Rally GB in the 8 or 9 years that I've done it. So I was quite surprised.
It's we thought with it being moved earlier in the year, thought, okay, because we had Ian Campbell on the clerk of the course last week, and we were talking about obviously everybody's testing beforehand, and you know, Citroën had done a dry test, and you know, whether that was going to have something to do with it and everything else, and how, you know, we heard one, I think Hyundai were testing and they were getting water bowsers onto the stage. That's how dry it was when some of these guys were doing the GB test. And, you know, everybody had concerns thinking, geez, you know, what are you going to be faced with? And of course, they were very, very wet, weren't they?
Yeah, and I remember we had the exact same situation last year. You know, we tested for the rally in the World Rally car in the dry, and we did the rally in the wet. But, you know, I don't think it's a massive challenge nowadays. You know, I think most people come to Rally GB expecting it to be wet regardless. And, you know, there's enough data and enough history from the event that people know how to respond to that appropriately.
Now, Hayden, obviously you were in the R5 car for the first time in the R5 Fiesta. What was it like to make the switch to the R5 Fiesta?
Actually quite difficult. You know, it probably took me a bit longer to adapt to it than what I would have liked. Obviously, we only had half a day testing before the event, so not a lot of time in the car. And then, of course, once again, the rally environment, and especially back in the WRC environment, which we've been out of for nearly 12 months, it took a little bit for everything to gel again. And obviously, we were there to try and help develop the car as well. And, you know, to start with, it didn't really suit my driving style. But as the weekend progressed, we were able to certainly move that in a good direction.
And was that where we having to change the car? What areas is that sort of suspension changes you're making?
We pretty much ended up changing most things on the car, to be fair. And, you know, it is still a new car. It's in its new phase for M Sport. And, you know, they're still getting more drivers in to help with that development. And every driver's got a different driving style, and that requires different setups. And, you know, I think we can see the potential of the car is there, because, you know, some of our stage times and Gus's times were quite okay. And that was considering I wasn't comfortable in the car. And, you know, the difference between when you're comfortable and not comfortable in a car, performance-wise, can be quite large. So I think there's still a lot more to come from that.
And you obviously had a wide range of competition. There was very hot competition in WRC 2, but obviously when you've got not only a team like Skoda, but also Kelly Rovanperä as well, I guess they're the obvious benchmark in a tried-and-tested car with a very quick young driver in it.
Yeah, well, I think it's, as many have said, it's one of the strongest WRC 2 fields for, or maybe ever. So it was great to see, and it's great to see that level of competition. Personally, I'd say it was probably pretty tough from the respect that we had to almost ignore that. You know, we're never coming here with intent to compete, and that's really hard, because, you know, I'm a competitive person, and that's almost impossible to ignore when you're on event. But, you know, you've got to be realistic at the end of the day. You know, we hadn't really done any testing. It's a new car. I haven't done any miles this year effectively compared to everyone else. And it was really about, the testing and development side. And, you know, the best place to test a rally car is on a rally in terms of getting relevant information. And that's what the priority was.
And I mean, as you...
Sorry, right. I was just about to ask, because I suppose the other thing for you as well, Hayden, and I listened to the great piece you did with Bex as well on their podcast. And, you know, that mindset of being... You know, because people forget that Rally GB or all WRC rally, it's basically a week. You've got, you know, 2 or 3 days of recce, 4 days in a rally car. You know, to get out of that loop is probably, it's a lot harder than probably, you know, most people appreciate, isn't it?
Oh, definitely. Like, you know, when you're at this level, you need to be at 100% in all aspects of the sport. And, you know, I'm still driving while I'm on, you know, around the world still, but not in the same sort of environment. And, you know, the rallies that we're doing at home, we're doing the reconnaissance on the Fridays, and then we're rallying on the Saturday, Sunday. All of a sudden coming back to that environment and just getting back in the routine of 2.5 days of recce. You got the Thursday where you muck around all day, then you got 3 reasonably large days of rallying. You know, it doesn't just click straight away after 12 months. You have to get back in that routine, and that is another reason why GB was important for us as a warm-up before Australia.
Has it been good to, obviously, it's well documented, of course, what happened on Finland, and, you know, it was massively, massively frustrating and upsetting for all concerned, but, you know, M Sport, you know, made some great efforts to obviously bring you back and get you involved. And, you know, to, was this almost part of the process of settling you back into the team as well before you are back in a World Rally Car?
Yeah, certainly. Obviously, after Finland, the objective was to get back in a World Rally Car again, and Australia was the obvious choice of what was left. And so that was the one that we worked on, and that's where we were able to put together a deal with M Sport. And then part of that deal for them to help us is that they added Rally GB onto that with the R5. So, you know, again, it was very kind of them. And, you know, obviously we want to help them develop the car as well, but it wasn't something that they had to do. So for sure they are doing everything they can to help us to get up to a good level and to make sure that we make the most of Australia.
It feels like every driver, and I've said this before, and I'm not kind of just saying this and not trying to put you on the spot or anything like that, but I've said this and we've discussed it various times on this podcast, is that every driver seems to need to go through M Sport. And you know, some people stay there a year, some people stay there a few years, some people stay there for quite a long time. When you think about Elvin, what he's done, and he's grown up obviously with M Sport, but it's almost like M Sport is almost like a good cleansing place for somebody to go and kind of reignite the career almost and you know, whether it's Malcolm or whether it's Rich or whatever, but that kind of arm round, that family atmosphere definitely seems to add something to a driver. Are you already starting to pick up on that, Hayden?
Yeah, 100%. Obviously, I haven't worked with a lot of teams. So, you know, coming from where we were in the past to come to M Sports is quite a refreshing environment. Not to say where we were was bad. It's just that, you know, M Sport is certainly a lot more friendly, a lot more down to earth. They're certainly working with the drivers more and making the drivers feel comfortable, engaging with the feedback and generally working together as a really tight unit. And, you know, as a Kiwi, that's very much very similar to the Kiwi culture, very similar to how we do things at home, and that's why it feels somewhat more natural for me.
And you jumped into the R5, as we said, you've driven the AP4 car in New Zealand. What's the challenges of an R5 car in itself after the WRC cars that you've been in recently?
Yeah, quite different, actually. Obviously, the AP4 that we have at home, we've actually developed that to now be a very, very good car. We've, you know, spent 3 years on that, so it's taken some time. And, you know, the R5 cars are potentially a little bit easier to drive in the fact that they have a lot of engine torque. They're a bit like the old Group N cars. You can almost leave them in fifth gear and just leave your hands on the wheel sort of thing, whereas the AP4 probably has a little bit more power and it's a little bit more agile and a little bit more lively, so you really have to sort of grab it by the scruff of the neck and drive it. The R5, the biggest thing I struggle with, you have to be really, really precise, really smooth. You've got to be driving a gear up everywhere to what you're used to. And because they are quite limited on power, is, you know, you have to be very committed, but the problem is with no power, if you make a mistake, when you're committed, you're not coming back from it. So in that sense, it's actually harder than the WRC car, I found.
And also a lack of aero as well now, because we hear, you know, how aero dependent a World Rally car is nowadays.
Yeah, probably more so from the rear of the car. You know, I think the aero in the front of World Rally cars is obviously doing the job, but it's not the biggest factor. I think that certainly the rear of the car is where the aero is helping the most, and you see that in the high speed sections where you can really commit and just really lean on the car and trust that the aero is going to hold the car on its line. On the R5, in that sort of flat out fifth gear stuff, yeah, you do have to be a little bit more conscious that the rear is probably not going to be as stable. And then there's a couple of times through during the rally in the weekend that, yeah, it did snap out on us and caught us by surprise.
But back in the environment now, back with good mileage, thoughts turning ahead to Australia. What sort of time are you going to get in the WRC car ahead of the event?
So that's why we're staying in Europe this week. We've got a test down in Spain on Sunday with the team, so that'll be a one-day gravel test in preparation for Australia. And then, head back home. We've got a couple of small PR events at home, and I'll try and get our TCR out on track just, you know, to get as much driving time and miles as much as I can before Australia. And basically, obviously, we'll go there and forget about result, forget about times, and just make sure we go to Australia and just drive the car as fast as we possibly can and do the best job that we can, and then that's the target and the priority.
Of course, we can't not talk to you about the return of Rally New Zealand next year, Hayden. With that news that was about to break, did that make the deal to get back out in Australia, did that perhaps make life a little bit easier for you with your backers and your supporters, knowing full well that next year New Zealand's back?
Yes and no. It makes things a little bit more complicated for us more than anything. Okay. Obviously, you know, it's great to see Rally New Zealand back. It's something that, you know, obviously there's many people at home that have been working very hard for that. And, you know, we've been involved a little bit as well, trying to help that for 3 or 4 years now. So it's great to see it come back, but it's a double-edged sword because, you know, it's a dream to see that back, but it'd be a shame if we couldn't actually be there in a World Rally Car. So that's now the target and the goal beyond Rally Australia, is to make sure we can put together some program to work towards Rally New Zealand. And we know how competitive it is nowadays. We just can't turn up for one rally next year. We have to try and put together some sort of program, and that's just simply not very easy at the moment. There's just not many opportunities out there. There's not many seats. So it's going to put a lot of demands on what we can actually try and put together over the next 6 months.
There's obviously potentially a lot of people going to be without a seat come the end of the year. I'm assuming that you've got a clean piece of paper now. You can pretty much talk to anybody with regards to a programme for 2020.
Yeah, well, like, we've just got to keep all options open. You know, at the end of the day, we can't talk to anyone at the moment. We don't have a score on the scoreboard, so we have we don't have 2 feet to stand on. So Australia, we just need to literally do that, try and get a result under our arms, and then hopefully have some discussions from there. You know, I'm no doubt pretty realistic that it will be tough. We're certainly going to try, but there's quite a few drivers out there at the moment, as you say, and not many seats, so it makes it tough, but by all means not impossible.
Do you not feel what's gone before still stands you in good stead though, Hayden? Because, you know, you've got history. You've been around the WRC for a while, a good while. You've been scoring points, you've been, you know, winning things and everything else for 10 years at that WRC level. Surely that must stand for something as well.
Well, I'd certainly like to think so, but obviously that didn't help us at the end of last year, did it? So, you know, it's a brutal world. Any professional sport is, and you know, I'm not going to keep on dreaming and kidding myself forever. Of course, I'm going to keep trying. I'm not going to give up on it, but got to be realistic about the situation as well. But I like to think if we can get a good result under our belt, that we can maybe show someone like InSport that we can provide their team something next year. I think a full-time program next year is probably unrealistic, but you know, if we can put together a program of 5-6 rallies of our strong points, or strong events, sorry, where we can bring some good points and experience to the team, and then obviously build up to Rally New Zealand, then I think that would be the objective for us.
Obviously, we'll keep everything crossed for you, Hayden. If we can just take you home just for a split second, you've spoke about this, and there's been some releases about this. Obviously, what you're doing with your own team, which I think is phenomenal, what you guys are doing over there. Obviously, the news of what you're doing with Electric, obviously it polarizes rally fans across the world, but it's something that you're quite passionate about, and obviously your team are quite passionate about moving forward.
Oh, at the end of the day, I'm a petrolhead and motorsport fan just as much as anyone else, but I'm very passionate about rallying and the sport. You know, for me, it's my life, and I want to see the future of it continue to grow. And you know, the current crop of cars are certainly exciting. You know, I love them, but in 5 or 10 years' time, that's just not realistic. That's what manufacturers are going to be investing in, and we have to start pushing the envelope now, looking for new technology solutions. And you know, I think that we can try and help be part of that solution and help lead the way. And it will be exciting. You know, EV motorsport will not be what it is now. It will change. It will be exciting. It will be noisy. So yeah, we just want to be part of that and help grow the sport long term.
I did hear you say something about obviously noise and something else that you were speaking about as well. Where are you going to generate your noise from? Because that is the big thing that rally fans keep on talking about, isn't it? You know, we've all kind of talked about tongue in cheek as well, but that was something you were quite adamant about, the noise. What's going to generate the noise for you guys?
Well, I can't give away too much, especially, can I?
Okay, of course, yes, sorry.
we're working on a few things at the moment. We do have we've got some very, very clever engineers working with us at the moment, and that's one of our engineering objectives at the moment. So, yeah, I've come out and put some very clear objectives on it for the team that our car will make noise. Watch the space, I guess.
Fantastic. And of course, if you're wandering around M Sport, you can also go and look at what they're doing with their electric program as well. It could be a win-win for everybody, couldn't it, Hayden?
Yeah, well, obviously there's a lot of people working on electric. We're obviously focused on the rally space, because I think that provides, there's a lot of challenges there, which is why not many people are doing it at the moment. But yeah, I think there's a lot of people and a lot of teams working on electric at the moment.
Fantastic. Listen, we thank you for your time, and thank you for coming to talk to us about GB, and we keep everything crossed for you. We look forward to seeing Hayden Paddon back in a World Rally car on Rally Australia. Enjoy this coming weekend. I'm sure you will end up back in a World Rally car, and we'll catch up soon.
Great. Right. Thanks so much, guys.
Thanks, Hayden. Speak to you soon. Folks, we're back after this break.
This is Absolute Rally.
Quarter, mid-left crest, 86 right, minus, tightens over jump, opens over 50, sharp left, tightens 5-6 on left crest, over 70, 5 right.
Ireland's leading commercial note supplier, Killian Duffy, has joined forces with 2016 British Rally champion Craig Parry to form On The Pace Note UK. For more information, visit the website onthepacenote.co.uk.
Welcome back to the final section of Absolute Rally. Thanks to Hayden for joining us in the middle of the programme. Obviously, he's a busy man in between finishing Rally GB, getting ready for his gravel test in the World Rally Car, and we do appreciate his time. We wanted to get to the point where one thing, right, by the way, I didn't mention last week. I got really excited about last week's programme, probably more so than what I probably should have done, because obviously I did this. I tried to recreate the whole Top Gear Rally Report thing. I was William Woodard last week. In my head, I had my foot up on the chair and I sat on the end of the desk with a headset on last week. And that's what I was recreating. And I genuinely hope that it was people listened to it and thought about it in the right vein, because it was meant to be fun and it was meant to be tapping into that thing, which I'll be honest with you, it was following on really from what we've done with, of course, VHS rallies. You know, people do love looking back, don't they, right? You know, whether it's watching a whole rally or whatever. I've become really, really engrossed with, you know, I've discovered that my TV, now I can get it to go on YouTube. So me and Johnny at the weekend, Mummy was out waiting for in between stages of Rally GB being on WRC Live. We were watching stuff on YouTube on VHS rallies.
And you've only just discovered this now, have you? That
just very, very briefly, I live in a rural area and I can't get broadband properly in mine. And I basically cancelled it and went out and got a home hub because I can get really good 4G. So I can now connect my TV via 4G. I couldn't connect it via the broadband because it wouldn't stream properly. So all of a sudden now I've found this whole new world. Rather than watching stuff on my phone, I can do it on the TV. So yeah, VHS rallies on our big screen TVs was amazing at the weekend. And my wife is listening. Heather, of course, I went out and did interesting things with our son and I didn't keep him in for 2 days. Anyway, so I hope you enjoyed last week. I know you listened to it, right, going to the forum, didn't you? Forum was good fun for you last week?
Yeah, the forum was great, but I listened to it on the way, and it was brilliant to hear the stories. You know, Tiff was obviously really enthusiastic about those years of rallying when he covered it, and, you know, good to hear that he still listens to the sport now, or still listens and still keeps tabs on what's going on with the sport currently, so that was nice to hear.
Yeah, it just took me back to a time. I'll be honest with you. Obviously, we Mark James is fantastic. He's been on several times, and you know, we're very fortunate. And again, he's a voice of my kind of teenage years. Probably the same for you as well, right? Because we're the same age. But it's always great whenever I talk to Mark on the phone. I still get a little bit excited because I still think back to Rally Report. And I've been speaking to Tiff about something else, and I thought, I had that epiphany moment because I did text you, didn't I? And went, do you think this is going to be a good idea, or do you think this is really naff? And to be fair, right, you're the one who made it happen, because you went, I think that could be quite good, that. So that's why it came. So there you go. So everybody, blame Ryan Champion if you didn't think it was very good. But I think it was excellent anyway. So there you go. So yeah, I was William Woodard last week. Going back to Rally GB, right, of course, we talked about it quite a lot at the top of the programme. We never talk really results, obviously, as a rule, because we appreciate our listenership is a lot sharper than most, and they know all results and everything else. And one thing that has been spoken about quite a bit, and it's hard not to talk about it, was the Hollywood of the Solbergs. It didn't quite turn into the battle right we thought it was going to turn into, or potentially, I suppose, we all hoped it was going to turn into. But what it did do is give us that fairy tale ending to Petter Solberg's career.
Yes, it did. And it was a great drive by Petter. He did a solid professional drive. He said he loved having Phil back alongside. And to finish in the top 10 was just really the icing on the cake for him, wasn't it? So a great drive from all weekend. Just solid, never made any mistakes, but was still very, very quick. You know, he was only 45 seconds behind the hottest, one of the hottest properties in the WRC at the minute in R5. So you know, fantastic to see him. Really, really enjoy it. You know, he clearly enjoyed the weekend, and nice to see him actually don it. The helmets at the end to former team bosses Dave Richards and Malcolm Wilson as well. And, you know, a lovely way for him to finish his career. It was a shame, like you say, that the battle with Oliver didn't quite materialise. But, well, I'm not sure there would have been much of a battle looking at Oliver's stage times, honestly.
Well, he put in some, you know, the times were strong, weren't they? The ones he completed were very, very strong, Oliver.
I mean, incredibly so. I think, was it, it was the first, obviously he had a
bad run with the missed screen on Alton Park, which kind of put him on the back foot a little bit.
And then it was the first stage out the following day that he had a problem as well, didn't he? So he really had to wait until he restarted on day two. And I think it was Dovey was the first stage. And he was something like just under 10 seconds faster than Cali Robbin-Pera, who was still battling at the time. And I think Hayden was the next fastest, and he was another 6 or 7 seconds behind that. So it was an incredible time. He took nearly 30 seconds. I think it was 25 seconds out of his father. And when you think that Petter was only 45 seconds behind Robbin-Pera at the end, I think Robbin-Pera backed off and he had some problems himself. But nonetheless, Oliver took 25 seconds out of Petter in that 25-kilometer stage. And his times were incredible, given his experience. It was probably the drive you'd expect of somebody of his age, incredibly quick, then went off the road. But nonetheless, you know, it was impressive to see those times against the world's best drivers in WRC2.
I think he's been managed very well, and I think, you know, I keep on coming back to this. I think he's been managed in such an incredible way, because, you know, the go-to has been, and quite rightly, you know, and it's been proven, Cali Robbin-Pera, you know, he's going to be in a world car next year. You know, that's the conversation which is going on right here, you know, with around the world. People are talking about, if you're a rally fan, Robbin-Pera, you know, he's going to be in a Toyota next year. He's going to be here, you know, he's going to be getting a limited program, whatever it may be. And I suppose Oliver really hasn't had that talking up. You know, this was his first WRC round in an R5 car. And then all of a sudden, you know, I didn't have any real doubts whether he was the real deal or not, but I just felt perhaps it was going to be another year or two, you know, perhaps, you know, at that level, because, you know, WRC2, you know, as well as me, if not probably better than me, right? That's where you go now. That's, you know, that's the place where people go to prove themselves now, is WRC2, because you're doing the same events as the big boys and you're learning the events, and that's where you go. So to go there, as you say, do those times, I think it's all of a sudden we're back in the realms of, we've got another Robbin-Pera situation already starting to spring up here, and you think, well, where could Oliver go?
which makes Tiff's comments from last week come back to mind, where he said, you know, we're going to see a Robbin-Pera in a work seat, we're going to see a Solberg in a work seat, and suddenly there's not many left for everybody else. But yeah, you're right in what you're saying about Oliver. He's been developing a little bit under the radar. Obviously, he's done all the rallies in the States this year with Subaru, which has been good experience for him, writing pace notes on events that are completely different to what he'd experienced. He's still got to obviously find the consistency at world level, but again, we've seen it in America this year when he's had trouble free runs, he's been very, very quick there and winning rallies. So I'm sure it'll come, but like I said, I expected him to go well, but I didn't maybe expect to see him setting stage times that were clearly faster than the opposition. But he had nothing to lose, everything to gain. We've got to remember that Cali Robbin-Pera was fighting for his first world title, which he duly took. He took the WRC2 title, so he clearly didn't want to make any mistakes. But nonetheless, you know, we had Mats Osberg there. We had obviously Hayden, who we've talked to. We had Petter. We had Greisen, who's very quick. Kapiski, you know, as well as the Tom Caves, Matt Edwards. You know, it was just an incredible lineup of drivers. So,
Sorry to interrupt. Capecchi, by the way, I thought was a great story. I don't know if you know the story behind the co-driver.
No, I knew it was his first World Rally,
yeah,
wasn't it?
Yeah. Basically, he was a young Czech co-driver. Is it Pavel? What's his normal co-driver? Pavel. He'll come to me in a second. Anyway, his normal co-driver couldn't do it, and rather than go, you know, he decided to give. You know, there's been an opportunity given to a young Czech co-driver, first WRC rally, first time, I think, you know, at that level. And obviously done a fantastic job. And I just, you know, again, it's another little, you know, we forget sometimes rallying's full of little stories, and I love all the little stories behind all the drivers. And that was one that I really, you know, it's a bit of a heartwarming one because somebody's been given an opportunity there. Sorry to interrupt, Ray.
Yeah, and like you said, great to see. Although, ironically, where, you know, we talk about Capecchi week in, week out, because he's normally doing a really solid professional job. Did you see where he rolled?
I didn't see where he rolled,
So for anybody listening to this who knows Sweet Lamb quite well, over the two jumps at the top, square left around the gatepost at the end, he clipped the gatepost and rolled.
Really?
of all the corners on all the stages, you know, it's probably one that anybody competing in this country would know very, very well.
That's the yump yump through the gatepost, square left, and then it starts to go down like a roller coaster.
Yeah, that's the one. So that's where it was.
How did he roll there?
I think he seemed to get a bit sideways and maybe just clipped the post as he was going sideways, and it sent him over. So, you know, that unfortunately dropped him down. Gus Greensmith again was setting great times in the new Fiesta, but he had his problems as well, brought the rear suspension. So it was a tough battling in WRC2. And a quick mention to Matt Edwards as well, because twice British champion now, but had no mileage in that car at all before the shakedown. Literally, I was talking to him on whenever it was Wednesday evening, and he drove it to the refuel to get his first idea of how the car felt and where the buttons were. And he was, was he somewhere in the top 10, wasn't he, around Alton Park? I can't remember now, but so he jumped in it in the rain of Alton Park, and I think he might have even been seventh quickest. I can't remember without looking, but unfortunately didn't have quite a good such a good rally. But great stories in WRC too.
Pavel Dresler. There you go. That's who's been sat with Jan Kopecky for forever and a day, it feels like, anyway. But still, there you go. There you go. A couple of other bits and pieces. As I say, we talked about the Solbergs, and hopefully I'm going to try and get Phil Mills to join us. He was meant to be with us last week, but obviously he was a busy boy. So I'm going to try and get Phil Mills at some point over the next couple of weeks anyway. But I know he's got a lot going on because he's got a grown-up job now as well. Of course, he's got his own business. So I know he's been flat out for the last couple of weeks with Viking Motorsport as well. So hopefully we'll catch up with him there anyway. Ryan Champion, we're at our stage of any other business. I've got a funny feeling on any other businesses may clash.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because we haven't spoke about it yet. And it's hard to believe that we've not spoke about. We go from one, I suppose, from one world championship event to... I feel like I'm doing Muller disservice here, calling it probably one of the biggest clubman events in the United Kingdom and mainland around it. But it kind of is, because obviously it's not a works team type, but it's back and it's a big event. And I've seen some weather reports, and it makes Rally GB look relatively dry from what I've seen so far.
So that means Mull was going to be one of your any other business.
It was, yeah.
Any other businesses or any other business.
Yeah.
Well, I'll let you do that one then.
Well, no. To be fair, it was just more of a tip of the hat, really, of basically Mull being back. Obviously, you know, with the closed roads situation that we had, obviously it ran, I think, more as a road rally last year, but it's back this year. I think former winner John McCrone, who did it in an R5, of course, with one of your airport buddies alongside Stuart Loudon, who's been in and around sport for many, many years, of course. The man who's good for a biscuit, I think it's fair to say,
and,
Stuart.
And a man who's got a busy week, because I believe he's testing in Spain today.
Really? Well, so, there you go.
Yeah. So he's definitely got a busy week, but I'm sure he's been up to Mull a few times already. And like you say, great the event's back. Not only is it back, I think there's something like 150 entries. You know, the entry filled up within hours, and it will be fantastic as ever. And what's quite interesting to see all the front runners up there, the likes of John McCrone and Callum Duffy, David Bogie, they've all been and done it in their four-wheel drive cars, in World Rally cars, in R5 cars, and they're all in Mark IIs this year. So the three of those are in Mark IIs against Paul McKinnon in an R5 car. So a real eclectic mix of cars, as ever, that Moore gives. So fantastic to see it back, and it'll be great to see what happens at the weekend.
You forget, and this is what these events are great for as well. You look at the entry, and you look at the top 10, the Mark II obviously is going to be state-of-the-art, that John McCrone's, and I think...
Yes. Yeah.
I've seen some pictures of it. Obviously, Bogey's car, we know all about. David's been on and talked to us about his car. His car is like a mini, it's like a rear-wheel drive world rally car, I think, at the end of the day. But just looking at, you look at the Focus World Rally car, for instance, that Bardi's in. I don't know what one was that? That's one of the V-Reg ones, I'm sure it is. One of the very, very early, whether it was Radstrom's car or something like that, you probably know better than me, right? But I'm sure Tony Bardi's is one of the very early Focuses. You've got Daniel Harper there as well with the mini World Rally car, obviously one of the Pro Drive ones as well. And that's what you get on these events. You've got these eclectic mixes of rally cars for probably the last 20 years, but were at the sharp end of the sport in their areas as well.
Yes, yeah, absolutely. I think, like you said, Tony Bardi's car on a different number plate now, but I think that started off as a McRae car back in sort of 2000 or 2001. And as you said, you've got everything from World Rally cars, as we said, through R5 cars, Group A cars, for want of a better description, the Club Spec Mitsubishis and Subarus, and then right through to the Novas and the Astras and the 205s, and it's great because it's a cross between a club rally and an international tarmac rally, isn't it?
Well, you look at the timing of it, and this is something, of course, we used to be quite, and we spoke about it quite a lot, of course, Jim Clark Rally, that's coming back, thank God, later this year as well. But we used to talk about, of course, the Jim Clark Rally that used to run through the night. Of course, Mull embraces that, car one away at 7 o'clock on the Friday evening. And then the final stage starts at 53 minutes past midnight on the Sunday morning.
Which is why we both need to do it at some point.
not together.
Not necessarily in the same
I just
car.
Want to say, not in the same car, right? There's so many reasons
why
we should
Jack
be...
Jack Benyon, because he's more polite.
There's so many reasons why we should never be in the same car doing a rally. So I completely agree with you.
And you're reminding me, I must drop the steering rack off at 5 o'clock tonight. That's making its way to Mull for an Evo for this weekend.
Yeah, you probably should, right? Because let's be honest, it's a very twisty rally. They're going to need that steering rack. Right. So that was my any other business, right? So I don't even know whether we've encroached on yours or not, but you're any other business.
No, not really. I was going to mention Mull at some point, but you went with that one. I had a few other things that I wanted to cover anyway. I caught a little bit of the Rallyo coverage last night on
me too. Me too.
And I thought it was great. I didn't understand exactly what was going on most of the time. sorry to our Welsh listeners, because I'm sure they did, but I didn't. I did understand when Jimmy McRae came on, thankfully. But I really enjoyed watching it because it had the main rally, it had the national rally, it showed lots of different stuff. And for me, that went back to, like you talked about, the coverage of Rally GBs of old, or of the RAC rally, when we used to see what the national runners were doing, we used to see what the clubmen were doing, and I really enjoyed the Rallyo coverage, so good on them for doing something different and still showing the 1400 Sunbeam, for example, that was going very well.
So a proper clicky box in that, he can pedal that car, to be honest with you. I'm trying to think, it's Chris Price, is it, who drives that? I can't think. I should know him because I've met him several times. He owns the go-kart track. It'll come to me in a second. But yeah, proper clicky box in it and everything else. It's a proper screamer, and it's really turned out well and everything else. But yeah, I watched the coverage as well, right? And it did harp back, I suppose, as you say, to what I was talking about last week. But anyway, there you go, mate. What's your second any other business?
Another couple, really. As you said, it was the Rally Forum last week, which had a great night. Whichever night it was, it was last week now.
it was Wednesday.
That one to bed. But yeah. Great night. One of the interesting guests that came on was Pierre Boudard, and he was really interesting to speak to. Sometimes when he's interviewed, he seems quite defensive, sitting under pressure a lot over the last couple of years. But he was very open and honest in his interview, and quite happy to chat. And, you know, some of the things he was saying, we asked him, there was myself and Howard, and we asked him about why does Citroën run a two-car team, for example? And he was pretty clear on that. He said, with their current budget levels, they want to be able to develop the car. They want to be able to keep the car at the cutting edge. And in order to do that, they can only afford to run two cars. You know, he said it was as simple as that. And he admitted that they've got challenges with the car, that they've constantly tried to develop it. But like I said, he was very honest about it. And he touched on hybrid as well. You know, we asked him about that, and he said the only way Citroën will stay in the WRC is if WRC goes to hybrid. He said it wasn't an option, it was an absolute must for them. So he was very interesting to see, and it was a great night as usual, all in aid of charity. Final thing I just wanted to touch on was that obviously the World Championship never stops. So on Sunday, whilst Oit Tanak was celebrating his win, and the Hyundai team were probably celebrating Thierry Neuville's second place, the test team were already in Catalonia, because they had Danny Sordo testing on Sunday, and I think yesterday. And then the greatest of all time, as Jack Benyon would say, of course, Sebastian Loeb started his test for Rally Catalonia for Hyundai today. So
I seen a photograph of him on a tractor.
Yes.
Oddly enough.
Yeah, Massey Fergie 135, I think it was, yeah.
You anorak. what is the equivalent of a bobble hatter in tractor terms?
I'm not a real bobble hatter. It's just we have a 35, so I do recognise that Massey Fergie, that song.
Of course you've got a tractor. Sorry, right. I'm the idiot here, aren't I? I'm clearly the idiot. Do you park that next to the Subaru or in front of the Subaru?
In fairness, we have a couple of tractors kicking around, but my favourite one's the little four-wheel drive Japanese one. That's great, that one. But anyway, we're getting off topic now.
I think we're massively off topic. Although there's
the
one
Yanmar.
Or two.
You can't beat a Yanmar. Yeah.
Right. And on that farming note, I never thought we'd finish a podcast on farming, but still, there you go. That is it for this week, folks. We will be back next week. I've no idea it'll be with us next week. That's the exciting part. We still haven't put it all together, so that's the joy. We try to do it as live, as you know, every week. Thank you all for sharing around last week's podcast. Keep spreading the love, keep spreading the word. We'll be back same time, same place in the podcast hold next week.
Absolute Rally, powered by the Kielder Works team. Spread the word and download the podcast every week.